Edwards-Helaire is in as the third down back, trying to get the call right. Here comes Watson in motion. They're going to throw a crossing pattern. Caught Rice, 30, angling, 25, up the sideline, 15, inside the 5, touchdown! Kansas City! A 39-yard crossing pattern, and then zooming up the sideline, Rashee Rice with one of the biggest plays this season for the Chiefs. They have the coveted second half two-possession lead.
Chiefs win, offense bounced back, and did plenty yesterday after the Chiefs dug themselves the early 14-0 hole. Defense recovered, and Rashee Rice got more involved, which we've been clamoring for quite some time, and the Chiefs get it done. 31-17 the final. That a 39-yard touchdown pass on a crossing pattern to Rashee Rice, who was the first Chiefs receiver all year long to have over 100 yards receiving, not counting Travis Kelce. He's a tight end. Or glorified wide receiver, or glorified tight end, plays wide receiver, whatever the case may be. The Chiefs won, and they are now 8-3, and they are the 2 seed in AFC because the Ravens won last night against the Chargers, because the Chargers know how to charger. You can never count on Chargers to win a game. They turned the ball over left and right last night, still had a chance to win, but didn't. So the Ravens go in their bye week with a half-game lead for the 1 seed, but if the Chiefs win next Sunday night in Green Bay, the Chiefs would be the 1 seed again in the AFC. If they win out, they are the number 1 seed and have home field advantage and would probably host the AFC title game for a sixth year in a row at Arrowhead. But there's a lot of football to be played. We'll talk more about the Chiefs' win yesterday over the Raiders, and we'll tell you the blessing in disguise that took place yesterday that allowed the Chiefs to maybe thrive on offense and found something in the process. Sports Ticket brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. Lots to get to here today as normal on a Monday. The state champions are crowned in high school football and in Class 6A. Well, let's start there, where Gardner Ederson won their first ever state championship over Derby, 22-19. Last year they had had a heartbreaker, and this year they come all the way back to win it. And then Mill Valley wins their fifth straight title in 5A over Cape Mount Carmel, 62-37. 4A title goes to St. Thomas Aquinas. No surprise there over Andover Central, 35-7. 3A title is Cheney, their first ever state championship over Hayden, 34-7. 2A, Nemaw Central down at halftime, 7-6, but wins in the snow in Salina, 28-14. They've won 26 in a row, and they're back-to-back state champs in 2A. In 1A, Conway Springs cruise to win over Jeff County North, 35-6. 8-man Division 1, Linden crushes Wichita County, 34-6. And Axtell with their third straight state championship in 8-man Division 2. 39 wins in a row, win by point rule at halftime in the state championship game, 50-0. I'm guessing not too many people were upset about being done early with the weather the way it was. 6-man championship, not close either. Shylin over Cunningham, 57-8. So the only good state championship game we really had was the 6A one.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything else was pretty one-sided. Nemaw Central Hoisington was a game for a while, and that was competitive. But other than that, everything else was blowout city.
Yeah, I was watching the 8-man games, and then I was watching the Axtell game, and Coach Detweiler, I think, was being kind of nice at the end of the first half and wasn't going to go directly for the win, but they ended up getting an open receiver, and Smelsley hit him downfield inside like the 10, and it's like, yeah, let's go ahead and just end it now.
Why not?
Before this close.
Why not?
So it was a crazy second quarter there, but yeah, that's an impressive. I was interested to see how the traction would be for that offense, you know, as quick and good as they are, if it was going to slow them down at all. And it did. They went 3-and-out on their first drive, but didn't slow them down the rest of the day.
Doesn't appear so. So they win their third straight title. All right, local sports schedule, Dusty, as we turn our attention to fall or winter sports.
Yeah, we're going to get into high school wrestling and basketball here this week. We'll have our high school wrestling locker room chats getting started tomorrow night, and then basketball will start Wednesday and Thursday with our locker room chats. And then Friday night, we'll have our first competition on the radio. High school basketball play-by-play is the Beloit Trojans host the Concordia Panthers in the rivalry matchup. Pre-game for the girls around 5:50 there Friday on Katy Country 94 and katycountry94.com with the girls game first, again, boys game to follow. So catch it all there at the Beloit Trojan channel at ncksports.com as well. Obviously, we'll preview all that coming up later this week, tell you about the rest of the matchups in the area. If you're ever wondering where your favorite teams are at here in the winter sports season, all the schedules are posted at ncksports.com.
All the state championship games were in the snow except at Pittsburgh State. The 5A title was nice weather down there.
Yeah, I was actually kind of going back and forth just to see what the snow looked like at every one of them. And Hutch looked the worst at the peak times. Mm-hmm. And then I went to 5A, and I'm like, well, it's sunny down there. What are we doing?
Yeah. By the way, the weathermen missed it again because they were saying 4 to 8 inches for our area. And I told my wife, we'll be lucky if the ground is covered. And it was for a short period of time and melted that quickly. They were talking more of the northern half of the state was going to get more of it, and then maybe slide a little bit south. And it actually was the east and the south that got the worst.
Yeah, the place I was going on Saturday, they were not wrong about. So I stayed back home in Waukene instead of going to the K-State game. So
yes.
I think I made the right decision on that. So
Manhattan got more than what they had forecasted the day before in regards to what we would get and what Manhattan would get. And they got it slid. They were off.
Yeah, I came back into town yesterday. I'm like, did it even snow in Mitchell County? Just a little bit. And it was up to 43 degrees and basically gone by the time I got back into town.
Absolutely. It didn't last very long. I was sitting here getting excited about it. We could keep kids out sledding and stuff.
Yeah.
So much for that idea. All right, let's talk about the Chiefs. They were down 14-0 early yesterday in Las Vegas, and the Chiefs are now 8-3. They scored 21 straight from the midway point of the second quarter early in the third. 3 straight touchdown drives. They found the offense. Pacheco was effective. Mahomes to Watson for a touchdown pass. Pacheco a couple touchdown runs. We heard the touchdown pass to Rashee Rice. And the Chiefs win the game 31-17. Mahomes efficient. It helps when his receivers don't drop the ball all the time. 27-34 for 298, 2 touchdowns. The Chiefs avoided turnovers. And after being shut out in the second half for 3 straight games, they scored 17 in the second half yesterday. Andy Reid was his 125th win with the Chiefs. That surpasses Hank Stram for all-time wins record as a Chiefs head coach in regular season. He's the first head coach in NFL history that had the most regular season wins for 2 different franchises. He won 130 games with the Eagles in his 14 seasons there, and now 125 in 11 seasons with the Chiefs, which if you do the math, Andy Reid is that's an average of 11 wins a season. That's pretty good. Over a span of 10 years, or 11 years, whatever it is, that's pretty doggone good. And the Chiefs do win. Let's hear from Andy on the quick thoughts on the win.
We went down 14 points. It's a tough thing to come back on that, but our guys battled back, and I'm proud of them for that. Defensively, we ended up shutting them down for 3 points in the second half, and offensively, we were able to get some points on the board. So those are all positives.
Chiefs did cut out some of the mistakes. There's a few penalties there in the second half, but all in all, much better.
I was proud of the guys for catching the ball the way they did. They really did a nice job. I mean, this is the thing. We do all that in practice, and they just did a nice job with that. And then the penalties, we were able to cut down on those. We still work in that area, and we'll continue to do that. But those unnecessary things, those things where you kind of shoot yourself in the foot, we eliminate it.
And Patrick Mahomes on cutting out the mistakes.
We executed better. I mean, we've shown that we can move the ball, but penalties and drops and me not getting to the right guy at the right time. If you look at the first drive, I mean, I go to Jay Watt, but they drop Kels from a cover zero pressure. I might be the second drive. And so just like little things like that has kind of stalled some of our drives, but we got to it. Kind of went back to the fundamentals this week, and we kept pressing and pushing, and we're going to try to keep going the rest of the season.
Rashee Rice with a big day. He had 8 catches, 107 yards, and a touchdown. Here's Mahomes on Rice.
I've said it all year. He has the talent. And he works hard. We're giving him more and more as the season goes on. And kind of the flow of the games, we've put him in more of a bigger role these last few weeks, but the flow of the game hasn't dictated him getting the football. But you saw today some of those coverages where they were doubling Trav, or putting a lot of attention on Trav. He was able to make some stuff happen, and like on that shallow cross. And so he's a guy who wants it. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing. He has the talent. He wants to be great, but it's going to take us just staying on top of it every single week, and he's going to be a great receiver in this league.
Okay, so where is this at? The mayor of Paris, and you may say, where are we going here? The mayor, trust me, there's a connection here. I always tie it together. The mayor of Paris, let me see if I find this. I thought this was pretty good based on what I was talking with a friend of mine yesterday about X or Twitter. Paris Mayor Anne Hidalgo announced today she's quitting the X platform, formerly known as Twitter, calling it a gigantic global sewer. I'm going to tell you something. When you are during commercial breaks or into quarters or at half, when you go on Twitter or X, whatever the heck you want to call it now, and it honestly, I can't really disagree with her description at all. it's a global sewer, or it's just a fest. It's a cesspool of negativity. That would be a good way of describing it for me. So it ties in with the Chiefs. So yesterday the Chiefs get down 14-0. I there is a commercial for Allstate. Is it Dr. Pepper? It's a Dr. Pepper commercial. Have you seen the one where they freak out? They got their faces painted. Okay, it's a Dr. Pepper commercial. They're watching the game, the big game. This is a series of commercials that they've done. Okay, mm-hmm. and they're going nuts after a play, and you're watching the commercial, and then the guy goes out and he goes, "I can't do this anymore," and he lights all of his gear for the team on fire in the front yard. And he comes back in, and then they divulge that was just the first play of the season. So it shows, and they're mocking people like I saw on Twitter. They're mocking people that freak out over things and jump to conclusions and don't let things play out. And it's a very kind of funny commercial to me because it really does reflect society in a way. And that is, we want instant gratification. And if our team makes one mistake, that's it. I'm done. I'm out. Could you let the game finish? Or, hell, maybe just let it get to halftime and see what happens. So yesterday, apparently the Chiefs lost the game in the first quarter, according to all the Chiefs fans that I saw on Twitter. And media people, too, aren't any better. And they're freaking out. And there's one that's a friend of mine I respect. He's like, give me one reason why I should think this game will turn around. I'm like, I got three reasons. Second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter. And I give you a fourth reason, Patrick Mahomes. I mean, why do Chiefs fans continuously do this? Chiefs fans might be some of the dumbest people on earth. I'm starting to wonder. I really am. And hopefully you're not one of those people listening on the show right now on your radio going, oh, God, I hope he's not talking about me. Well, I don't know. You can only determine whether or not you know if I'm talking about you. But when you freak out, when it's 14-0, I mean, yeah, it didn't start out well. I get it. The Chiefs are a little bit flat. But it's okay to actually, before you comment on Twitter about a game, it's okay to actually let it breathe. I believe it or not, it is actually okay to let it breathe. And Twitter, X, or whatever, a global cesspool of negativity is what I'll call it, is, and trust me, I would be all done with social media, with Twitter, maybe even Facebook, but Twitter in particular lately has gotten worse and worse the last few years. It's gotten worse. It used to be a cool platform. Now it's just trash. But I'm to the point where I want to dump it. I really do. Every once in a while, there's some cool things I find on there, but I want to dump it because it's becoming worse and worse and worse because of all the negativity and the gloom and doom and whatever else. But based on my profession, what I do, I kind of still need to be connected that way. Mm-hmm. If I was in a different profession, I think I would be done with it. And it would cause me a little bit less stress. I talked to a friend of mine, I don't know how many months ago this was, and their phone went kaput. So they didn't get a phone. They had to wait for like 4 days to get a phone. Said the best 4 days of their life.
I get it. I had to shut my phone off when I went to camp every week, right? Mm-hmm. Like just give it. Actually, I had to give it to them. And yes. You could only get it at night just to check if we had calls, right? Right. Emergencies. I did not have a problem giving them my phone. The teens did.
Sure.
But I didn't.
Well, and I'll give you another example, a little insight into my household, because I get a little bit frustrated, is my oldest is a senior. So he's into the phone like a lot of teenagers are, right? Now, I'll give him credit. He'll still work on his game. He works in basketball. He goes to the gym. He will go outside from time to time, so forth and so on. He hangs out with friends. He doesn't just stay in his room all the time and never socializes. So, and he'll play video games when, you know, he's not busy doing this or that. But last night, I'm to the point, my son's a senior, so he's not going to be around much longer, and he'll be going to college. And they say that you spend, what is it, 70, that, how is that? There, that when your kid turns 10 or 7 or whatever it is, you've spent 70% of the time you're going to spend with your kid is over by the time they're 7 or 10. It's something weird like that. Like, you don't even realize that it's already three quarters over. Mm-hmm. And then when your kid goes to college, then you let your kid out the nest and the kid goes, and hopefully they thrive, and you won't see them much except for the holidays, and maybe they'll come back and visit. Maybe they want you to do their laundry, things like that, when they go to college. So last night, we ended up, my wife made dinner, and nobody really helped her with that. me included, because we were watching the Chiefs game, and she knew the Chiefs game wouldn't get over till about 6:30. So dinner was ready at 7, and then we were trying to finish watching the overtime game between the Eagles and the Bills, because my kids are into sports, although my oldest is more into the video game during the day, and then he'll catch up what happened afterwards. He doesn't watch a whole game anymore. And I think that's where younger generations are going, and I get it. And so I just put my foot down last night, and I said, listen, we're going to play a game after dinner. We're going to sit as a family. We're going to sit at the table, and we're going to play a game. And we played Rummy Cube, which we hadn't played in a while. And then we played Uno. All right? So we played two games last night as a family at the table. We haven't done that in a while. Mm-hmm. And we're going to get pretty crazy busy with basketball in our family here very soon. And so we end up being about 40 minutes of family time. And so anyway, Rummy Cube, if you've ever played Rummy Cube, you take turns, and sometimes people take a lot longer than others to try to make their moves. Sometimes I do. I'm guilty of that. And so I'm trying to help my youngest figure how to play. He's learning as he goes. So we're sitting there at the table playing, and when it isn't my oldest son's turn, he immediately grabs the phone and starts looking at it. Mm-hmm. And I said, is it too much to ask? I wasn't very happy. I tried to hold it in. I wanted to light him up like a Christmas tree, because I was like, because I'm to that point where I'm so fed up with this stuff. But I know I don't have it nearly as bad as some people. And I know some parents don't even try, or they gave up a long time ago, which I think is a major mistake. But I said to him very nicely, I said, could we not have to look at the phone at least for a little bit? Can we not play a game without having to look at the phone? And he, you know, kind of snips off at me, and he says, well, nothing's happening right now. He goes, it's not my turn. And I said, but you're still playing the game. You're part of the game. Nobody else is pulling out their phone or looking at an electronic device. Why do you need to? I'm bored. Bored. Dear God, we played for 2 minutes. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, I think it's boring to sit on your butt and stare at a TV screen. And I do that even.
Yeah.
So I'm guilty of electronic stuff. And so I said, just put the phone away. Okay. God forbid you're not on your phone for 30 minutes. And trust me, knowing the stuff that he looks at, it's stupid ass Snapchat. I'm going to just say it. That has, hi, hey, what's going on? I mean, I've seen some of these conversations. It's a waste of time. It's just an absolute waste of time. Apparently kids are so bored in their lives, or we as parents don't make them do anything, or we can't find anything for them to do. And they just let their brain melt away into their phone. And adults are guilty of this too, just teenagers. Sure. But I am to the point where I just want to take the phone. I want to chuck it through the front window. My youngest wants to play the iPad after school. He wants to play iPads. Like, no, you got to do your chores. You got to do this, that. Then maybe you get the iPad to play on something. If it's nice outside, I try to encourage my kids, go outside. Yeah. All right, go outside. Sometimes they do on their own volition. Sometimes I force them to go outside. I'm like, you know what? You can wait till it's dark before you have to play on watch a TV show or play on the electronic device. I know you got to decompress a little bit after a long day at school. I get all that. But man, I think we as parents got to step up, and I'm right there at the front of the line here. Okay. And what you're worried about is alienating, upsetting your child, because you've let it go probably too far. And now it's hard to reel it in that it's already, the Pandora's box has been opened. And it does worry me what people are going to do, younger people, when they're, you know, I see it all the time. Adults are guilty as well, where I've done this little test. I'm driving down the road on a 2-lane highway, and I look directly at each person on the left side passing on the opposite side of a 2-lane highway. And I go ahead and I do like 10. It's kind of like a sample test for me, a little survey study. And I see how many of the 10 people are on their phone, either talking on the phone, or I can tell they are texting or reading something on their phone. And you know what? I've come to the conclusion, it's 40 to 50%.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear, and I understand for people in the city with all kinds of traffic and stopping and going, it's worse. That's scary to me. And that's scary to me as a parent. It's scary to me for my children, not only them being involved in something by not paying attention, but also other people hitting them when they might be paying attention, but the other people are not.
Yeah.
And so we are so addicted to all this technology, and it's not just the young people. But I was really to the point, last night, I'm like, for the love of God, you cannot put that phone down for 30 minutes. I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
It's not like you haven't even let everybody take a turn, and you're already jumping and pulling it up to look at what? Some message on Snapchat. It's not important. Trust me. trust me and trust me some more. Unless it's an emergency, it is not important. And odds are it's not an emergency if it's a Snapchat. All right, I'm going to go out on a big limb there. So I really, I encourage a lot of families, if you can, to, I'm going to try to do it. My kids might not like me for it, but maybe they'll understand it years from now. But I'm going to try to set aside an evening, like Wednesday evening, maybe for half an hour, maybe, because Tuesday, Friday is no good. We got ball games. Yeah. Maybe it's a Monday. Maybe it's a Wednesday. But I'm going to try to pick out an hour or a half hour of time, or play two games, different games every week. And if it takes 30 minutes to play them, if it takes an hour and 10 minutes, so be it. And I told my wife last night, I said, wouldn't it be great? Maybe I'm not smart enough technology-wise to do this, but wouldn't it be great if we as parents just had the power to turn all electronic devices off and lock everybody off of electronic devices for like a full hour? Or I told him, wouldn't it be great if you had, once your oldest and your youngest, every kid in your household, and even you as an adult, wouldn't it be fun? Because when you get, like, for instance, Gmail, I get these warnings for Gmail. You're going to have to pay more because your storage is running out, right? Okay?
Yeah.
Sometimes you get the warnings on your phone, your storage is running out. You know what I'd love to see is that you're only allowed so many hours a week on your phone. And if you've already got to 10 hours on your phone, if you're allowed 10 hours a week on your phone, which some people, that's 10 hours a day they're on it.
Oh, yeah.
But let's say you're allowed 20 hours a week on your phone, right? And you get the Wednesday and you're at 19 hours, you're in trouble. That tells you how bad it is for you. And it would be hilarious that you have to go without your phone for 3 days. Or the TV shuts off. Immediately when the TV gets to a certain amount of time each week, it automatically shuts off. Even in the middle of a Chiefs game. Even me, I would be affected. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I don't watch nearly as much TV as I once did. I really don't.
I don't. Well, my watching a lot is on my phone.
Right. Sure.
But I don't watch quite as much as I used to.
I get a deal on my phone that notifies me. I've used my phone so many minutes more or less than last week.
Uh-huh.
And the last 2 weeks I've been using it less, which makes me feel better about myself. But it's probably too much as it is.
Yeah.
So wouldn't it be great if we could somehow like set, and maybe there's a way and I don't even know it, but set an amount of time on every electronic device. It'd be really cool if you just do it across the board, just in one fall swoop. But if you said, okay, I know this is your phone, son, but I'm paying for it, or you might be paying for it, but I'm going to protect you here, or we are both on the account, and there's a deal to just say, when it gets to 20 hours, you're done. And then they got it. You know what you have to do then? It's called budget your time on your phone, which would be good for you when you get to school and college, to budget your finances, to budget your time, right?
Yeah.
You ain't just budgeting finances when you get older. You're budgeting time. You're trying to be efficient, right? Budget your time wisely and your money wisely. So if you're only allowed 20 hours a week on your phone, which is what, 2.5 hours a day? Isn't that enough?
Yeah.
Isn't 2.5 hours a day on your phone enough? Now, I'm going to tell you, I don't know how much time I spend on my phone a day. Some of it is work-related. Quite a bit of it's work-related. But there is other stuff that I do. I'm not going to lie. Sometimes when I'm bored, I'll look at something. In fact, I'll tie it back into the show. So getting back to on point here, when I'm watching the Chiefs game, and I'm laying on the couch down in the basement watching it, I could go upstairs and get something to eat or drink, but then I get fat. So I decide not to do that, right? So I'm chilling, and sometimes the kids are busy doing something, or sometimes on electronic devices. And I'm watching the Chiefs game, and so what do? I pull up my phone, and sometimes I get people that text me, friends of mine about the game. And then what do? I check Twitter. And I need to stop it. Because I checked Twitter yesterday, and it is a cesspool of negativity. There are actual coaches of high school teams that I really hope I never have my kid or me ever play for these people. I wonder how in the hell they're a high school sports coach.
Yeah.
Because they apparently think it's completely different. That, I mean, do you not understand what it's like to be a coach? Of course you do. And I know one particular instance was brought to my attention that this person has a lot of advantages, but hasn't exactly been winning championships. And yet they're talking about how the Chiefs suck, the Chiefs are horrible. Dude, they've won 2 Super Bowls. They've done a hell of a lot more than you've ever done in your life. And you're sitting here ragging on the Chiefs. It's the first quarter. 14-0. Oh, my God. We gave up a 63-yard run to Josh Jacobs, the humanity of it all. People are sitting there going, well, I don't have to worry about going to playoff games. It just saved me money. Even if the Chiefs lost yesterday, they'd be hosting a playoff game, you idiots. I mean, what is wrong with people? Do you not? Does the brain, does the TikToker thing not work in your head? Is there a bearing that's like jammed up and needs some lubrication in your brain? Because I am absolutely blown away by I can't say it any better than I can right here. Stupidity. It's utter, complete. It's a cesspool of negativity and stupidity at sometimes. And what's also funny to me, and I put it on Twitter, it is amazing to me how negative people can be. Because, and I'm not Mr. Positive all the time, so I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I'm on my soapbox and I'm perfect. I'm not. In fact, I need to be better at it myself. I'm too negative. But this stuff doesn't help me become more positive.
Yeah.
So maybe I need to get off of it. But I'm sitting here and I see this. But all these people that are negative Nellies, as I like to call them, that jump on anything that's bad. Do you know where these people went when the Chiefs went on a 31-3 run and led 31-17? They disappeared.
They're not there anymore.
Wait a minute. You're a Chiefs fan, so you talk about when they struggle. Why aren't you talking about, wow, what a throw by Mahomes dropping into Kelsey? Man, Pacheco. Reed's finally got it going. He's giving it to Pacheco. Man, I told you all along Rice needs to be more involved. This is awesome. No. Those people disappeared until Rashee Rice dropped one pass. All of a sudden, boom, out of the closet. Those people are not real fans. I'm going to tell you right now. Those people are not true, real fans in a way. Okay? You can sit here and say, well, that's what fans are, Wade. They're negative all the time. Well, if that's the way fans have become, to where they're negative and they have nothing good to say about their team, nothing positive whatsoever, then God help the world we live in, because that means you're never going to enjoy a Super Bowl championship. You're never going to enjoy a win. What are you going to enjoy? If you can't enjoy the Chiefs beating their number one rival after being down 14-0, if you can't enjoy that win yesterday, and you're focused on the defense struggling the first quarter, and you're focused on Andy Reid's play calling today, and you're focused on Rashee Rice dropping a pass when he had a great game, then you really need to reestablish some things in your life. Because you have lost kind of touch with reality here. And you're also hurting yourself. You're not really hurting other people. You're hurting yourself because you're not enjoying the journey. If you're a real Chiefs fan, yeah, I get some of the negativity. I get it. I'm not going to sit here and say everything is roses and rainbows. But after the first quarter, where in the world can you come up with negativity about that game yesterday? And somehow, as soon as somebody makes one mistake, they jump right back in, but they disappear when everything's positive. Now, if those people on social media are your friends, I would recommend you get new friends. Because I'm going to assure you of something. If they can so loosely throw stuff on social media, ripping people they've never met and don't even know, and be so super negative about every single thing about a team that's not 1-9 like the Panthers, but that's 8-3, that's been to the Super Bowl multiple times, and you have no reason to doubt these people in charge like Andy Reid and Brett Veach. And then this one guy was ripping Brett Veach. It's like, dear Lord, dude, you don't know what you're talking about, and you're a coach. And you just sit there and you say to yourself, what do you think these people that are supposedly your friends that you follow on Twitter, what do you think they say about you? What do you think they say about you at the end of a conversation you walk away? Odds are they're saying things bad about you.
Yeah.
Man, did you see what he's wearing? Did you see what she's... Did you see her hairstyle? What is up with the high heels? Why is he doing that? What a moron. Can you believe... Those are people you don't need around you. Those are people that make things worse for you. All right? And I am getting to the point where I just want to wash myself, absolve myself away from all of these people. And I'm close to pulling the plug on X, Twitter, whatever the heck you want to call it. Because the social media platform stuff, this wasn't designed. It wasn't the whole intent of it being created when it was created was not designed to be all negative. It wasn't designed to shove your political stance in front of somebody's face and argue and scream and yell. That wasn't what it was designed to do. We've taken a wrong turn somewhere, and we can't find our way back. But we do have a choice. You know, you can sit here and listen to me right now and say, well, Wade, you're complaining and you're belly aching. You know, you could just go ahead and solve it yourself. And you know what? You're absolutely right. Because if I continuously complain about this day in and day out, which I don't, but maybe if I get in a habit and I do, then I'm not making anything better myself, am I? I'm part of the problem.
Yeah.
I'm part of the problem. So how about being part of the solution? Now, what exactly is that solution? Is that throwing the electronic devices in the trash? Is it somehow stopping your kids from being on the electronic devices to where they hate you with a passion? But yet you're trying to protect them. Is it you yourself, like just going ahead and putting the phone away and hiding it in a drawer and not bringing it out until certain times of the day? I read this thing on social media, where this guy, he and his wife were close to getting divorced. He was not a very good person. He said, I was negative. I let the society bring me down. The things I read, he talked about it on social media and everything else. He goes, I was close to being done. My wife was close to being, she was ready to file the papers. And he decided, I got to change something in my life. And so what he ended up doing was he decided, I'm getting off of my phone. Okay. He said, I decided I'm not going to worry about every sporting event imaginable and watch every game. And I think he and his family agreed to work as a team to say, okay, we're limiting all of this that's going to happen in our life. We're limiting all the electronic devices. We're limiting the outside noise. And they've done that for a year. And they are happier than ever as a family. He's happy. His wife's happy. He's not got to worry about divorce. He says they go out, they play. He plays with his kids more than he's ever played before. They go do things. I'm like, wow, that. Congratulations to that guy and his family. Now, maybe all of us can take a little bit. Maybe we can learn something from that. Odds are we won't. I know that. You know that. Most people listening know that, because we get stuck in a routine and we're really, really, really afraid of changing anything in our lives, right? We might not even be happy in the routine we have and the way things are going, but we don't want to change it because we don't know what's on the other side. Now, sometimes people think the grass is always green on the other side. They might make the change all the time. But there are many people that just get stuck in a rut. They're not happy. They're negative about a whole bunch of stuff. And it's like, well, then why are you doing what you're doing? If you're so miserable, quit your job and do something else. Well, I can't do that. No, you can. You can. No, I can't, because I need to provide for my family. There are other jobs out there. There's tons of employment opportunities in the world today. All you got to do, it doesn't take very long to find a few.
No.
And is it taking a leap of faith to do something different? Yeah, but here's the question I have for you, everyone. If you are miserable doing what you're doing, shouldn't you think about making a change? And I'm not saying that change is going to be great. It may be, it may not be, but at least you've tried and there's no regrets going, you know what? I just got stuck in the same thing over and over and over. And the same thing applies with the social media part. You get stuck over and over. You grab your phone. The first thing you do and when you wake up is what? A lot of people check your phone, right? Yeah. I mean, I first thing I do is I get up, I go to the bathroom because I'm old. And then, and then I take a shower. Then I put my clothes on. Then I check my phone. My first thing, my phone is not next to my bed, by the way. There's a reason for that. So I do not check my phone immediately, but once I'm all dressed, before I eat breakfast, or if I eat anything in the morning, the first thing I check would be the phone. And it's to see if there's text or important emails, so forth and so on. So then if I'm watching a game, I check my phone, and I should just put my phone away for a whole game and then check everything after the game. And I might start doing that. I check my phone during commercial breaks. And thus I get the negativity of the Chiefs are horrible. If you were a person that was not from this planet and you came down from a UFO, which do or do not exist, depending on what you believe, and somebody came from another planet, came down to Earth, and they read all the things that Chiefs fans and Chiefs media said yesterday on Twitter during the first quarter of that game, I would be willing to bet you that that alien would say, that must be the worst team of all time. I bet that team hasn't won a game. It's amazing to me, and I shouldn't be amazed. It is sad. It's pathetic. And it is a cesspool of negativity to an extent. There are some good things you get out of social media. Don't get me wrong. With anything that's bad, there's usually something good. If there's anything that's good, there's usually something bad associated with it. But yesterday, the Chiefs' kingdom is a spoiled, rotten. I mean, you've become worse. I almost wonder if you're becoming worse than Patriot fans, because it's ridiculous. It's so over the top. So yesterday, the Chiefs, let's just talk about the game. I guess start with the negativity and get it out of the way, because there's not a lot that you should be negative about. They were flat early, all right? They're coming off a short week, travel across country, really disappointing loss, a game they gave away to the Eagles. The Raiders are much better with Antonio Pierce as their head coach. And a lot of Chiefs fans didn't even know the Raiders had a different coach. I knew it. I saw what the Raiders started to do as soon as they fired Josh McDaniels. They got a leader they respect, and they're playing better. They had a different philosophy, run the ball. The Chiefs aren't awesome against the run. I knew they'd pound the ball with Josh Jacobs, and they have a young quarterback that they like. One of the first things Antonio Pierce did was, we're not playing this quarterback carousel thing. This is my guy. He went with the rookie. And you know what? That makes him feel like, okay, nobody looking over my shoulder. I can go out and play. And he played pretty well yesterday, especially in the first half. The Raiders had a great game plan. Give them credit. And they were up. They established the run with Josh Jacobs. Then they established the play action. The Chiefs were on their heels. They had a great game plan. All right? And I know the Raiders scored after this happened, but I'm going to tell you a key play of this game. And I don't understand why coaches do these things. It blows my mind every single week. And it shouldn't. And especially when you're the underdog. The Raiders are smoking, man. They're going down the field. They got the Chiefs on their heels. They're up 7-0. They've got a 4th-and-1. Their offense is rolling. And they kick a 30-yard field goal. And what's really funny is they missed it.
They miss, yeah.
That was a new reprieve for the Chiefs. Now, I know the Raiders then would score on a 63-yard run to go up 14-0, but they should have been up 17-0 or 21-0.
Yeah.
And it's a whole different game, right? So I have to say, I love when aggressive coaches are rewarded, and I love when conservative coaches get burned. And I watch Washington on a 4th-and-1 at their own 30, and I'm saying to myself, against Washington State, go for it. I am. I'm saying to myself, watching this live before the decision was made, I'm saying go for it. And the announcers are incredulous and can't believe that Washington's going for it. You don't get it here. Washington State's in field goal range to win the game. Well, if you don't go for it and you punt it, you lose the game possibly as well.
Yeah.
So you know what you can control when you have the ball? Is you have the control of keeping the ball as long as you can get a yard. And they ran a perfect play call, and they got a big gain. They were rewarded, and they won, and they're undefeated, and they have a chance to win a national championship because, honestly, the coach had the guts. He trusted his players, and they made the play. Now, if that play doesn't work and they lose, he's ripped left and right. Yeah. Horrible decision. You know what? I still thought it was the right decision no matter what. I like the aggressiveness. I think aggressiveness should be rewarded. There are times Andy Reid's aggressive, it's a rewarded. There's times where he's too passive and he punts on 4th-and-4 at the 39, and I don't understand it. I'm a Chiefs fan. I almost like, you know what, I don't want the Chiefs to lose, but it would serve Andy right if he learned from this in a way by punting it and then giving a touchback and getting a 19 yards of field position. So yesterday, over the weekend, I saw a Washington coach with his team's chances of making a playoff on the line be aggressive, go for it, got rewarded, and they won. And he's celebrating victory after the game. What was Antonio Pierce doing after the game yesterday? He wasn't celebrating.
No.
He had a 4th-and-1. And once again, if it's a game where you're struggling to get yards and you have a 4th-and-1, I understand. You kick it. But no, not in this situation. You were rolling. You had the Chiefs on their heels. You're the underdog. Okay, your season's, honestly, the Raiders' season kind of was on the line yesterday because they're 5-6. You got to win that game. You got to be all out. And they were all out until they got to that play. And then he goes, Mr. Conservative, a defensive-minded coach, and Antonio Pierce decides to kick a field goal. I'm like, thank you. Thank you very much. And teams continue to do this against the Chiefs over these years. And I don't understand it. I don't know if you want to sit here and think the NFL is rigged, maybe there's something to it. The defense settled down after that big run they gave. They made adjustments, only gave up 3 points the rest of the game. So there's nothing to be mad about at the defense other than their slow start. The offense came to life. What are we going to say negative about the offense today, for crying out loud? They scored 31 points, 14 in the first half, 17 in the second half. They didn't turn the ball over. And here's the blessing in disguise. Kadarius Toney, who is made out of glass, well, they finally used him a little bit against the Eagles. And what do you know? He is banged up and hurt. He can't play. Mecole Hardman has a thumb injury. He's on the IR now. So there's two less receivers to rotate in. And some critics of the Chiefs, and I thought there was something to it, it seems like they kept rotating guys in, not going with a regular rotation, like basketball. Well, we got 12 guys playing and rotating in. Yeah, but is that good for your team to win? No. Early in the year, you find out your rotation. But then by the time it's crunch time, you got 7 or 8 guys you trust, if you're lucky. 7 or 8 player rotation, that's it. You're not going deeper in your rotation off the bench. That's the 7, 8 guys. You got a couple guards and a post as subs, and that's your rotation. You might have a 10th guy that's really good, but you know what? This is just the rotation I got. He's just not quite good enough. He's on the outside looking in. Then the Chiefs have done this for a good portion of the season, was they kept rotating in receivers, and you started to see Rice get some more snaps. Yesterday, they had no choice but to go with Rashee Rice and Sky Moore more often. They had no choice. And you know what? It was a blessing in disguise. And I thought about that before the game. I don't think it's a coincidence that Rashee Rice had his breakout game when Tony and Hardman aren't playing.
Yeah.
Rice, 8 touches. Pacheco, 20 touches. Kelce, 6 touches. And the Chiefs scored their most points in a month. That's not a coincidence. Your 4 best offensive players are, of course, 15, your quarterback. Kelce, Pacheco. And you know who the most next important guy is? It's Rice. We've been saying this for 6 weeks. Rashee Rice is the key to this offense turning it. Because Sky Moore isn't going to be the guy, okay? He might make a few catches. You know, they did get Noah Gray involved a little bit more yesterday. Uh-huh. I've been talking about that. That was good to see. You know, Justin Watson had a couple catches. But against the Eagles, Justin Watson had 11 targets. Yesterday, not 11 targets. Much better offense. So Mahomes even threw that one on the sideline, which was a great catch by Rice. He trusted Rice to make the play. Mahomes is starting to trust Rice more and more. So the key to unlocking this offense is, one, actually don't give up on the run. Let Pacheco have his touches. Clyde Edwards-Helaire even ran the ball well yesterday. Kelce gets his touches. That's ideal. But if you get Rice established, now there's a better chance Kelce gets his touches, right?
Yeah.
So then things start to flow. And that's exactly what happened yesterday in the second half for the Kansas City Chiefs. And they looked like the offense of old. Yeah, they didn't have a lot of deep shots. They had a trick play that worked for about 20 yards. Mahomes missed a wide open receiver a couple times in this game that could have been touchdowns, by the way. Well, Kelce was one of them. He even referred to it in the one cut. So Mahomes was not perfect. But that's the key. You got to put the ball in your best player's hands more often. Instead of, you know, flipping it to Mecole Hardman on a jet sweep or Kadarius Toney running the ball out of the backfield, throw the ball to Rashee Rice and see what he can do once he catches it, because he's like a running back in a wide receiver's body. And you give him more touches, what do you know? The offense did better yesterday. And they really had no choice but to give him more touches because of the injuries to Toney and Hardman. So it was a blessing in disguise. And so hopefully the Chiefs have learned something moving forward. Is this a one-time thing and then Rice disappears the rest of the year? It's possible. Sure, it's possible. Well,
I think we've seen that if they give him the targets and if he catches the ball.
Two big ifs.
He's been really, really good.
Right.
And you love, again, the way he runs after he catches the ball and can and create more yards than what you're expecting to get out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of yards.
So it's there. Like, we've seen it. Yesterday was the breakout, but we've seen what he could do if you get those two things going in the right direction.
Absolutely. I was impressed, and I was happy he was getting involved. And then one thing that's being overlooked from yesterday's game, I know Juwan Taylor had a couple of penalties. You know, Donovan Smith usually gets a hold a game, and Taylor had a hold. He had a false start, so forth and so on. But this is something Chiefs fans really, really have not been paying attention to. They're so caught up in the offense struggling. But you know, most of the year, Mahomes has had time to throw.
Mm-hmm.
The problem has been the receivers, as we know, not getting open or Mahomes not trusting them. The offensive line's actually done a pretty good job, except for the penalties. The penalties have hurt them, no doubt, at times. But yesterday, Mahomes, he barely got touched. Crosby sacked him. That was a coverage sack.
Yeah.
I mean, the Chiefs' offensive line, honestly, yesterday was really, really good. But yet nobody talks about it. They only focus on, oh, you know, he got his 14th penalty. Yeah, but Juwan Taylor did a good job yesterday on Max Crosby. I know he's not 100%. Donovan Smith did a good job. Wanya Morris came in for a few plays and pancaked a couple guys. Y'all start to wonder, maybe he should play a little bit instead of Donovan Smith if you want to go that far. But the Chiefs' offensive line is not bad. People act like the offensive line struggled. They've had some untimely penalties. But all in all, Mahomes is one of the least sacked quarterbacks in the league again. He's actually got more time to throw than he had last year, believe it or not. Do you know that? Last year, the Chiefs had the best offense in football, averaged the most points per game. Mahomes actually has more time to throw this year than last year. And we're sitting here ripping the offensive line. It's like, no, the problem is, now imagine what happens if Rice gets going and then the Chiefs do figure things out on offense. Now imagine what happens with this offense, because Mahomes has had time to throw. If he keeps getting time to throw and now all of a sudden the Chiefs are able to scheme and Rice is a bigger part of this offense, now Mahomes and the Chiefs offense should take off.
Absolutely.
And it did yesterday.
Yeah.
All right, NFL recap. Yesterday, over Thanksgiving, I should say, the Packers beat the Lions, and the Chiefs played the Packers Sunday Night Football this Sunday night, which you can hear on ZNI 6.3 Lake. Cowboys beat all the bad teams to a pulp. Can't beat the good ones. They won over the Commanders 45-10. 49ers beat the Seahawks 31-13. The Niners have refound their mojo. Dolphins took care of the Jets 34-13. The Hail Mary, as they call it now. Did you see that, where the Jets threw a Hail Mary at the end of the first half, returned 99 yards for a touchdown?
Yeah.
Kirk Herbstreit had the best line of the weekend. He goes, if that isn't the epitome of the Jets season, I don't know what is. That was hilarious. They call it, instead of a Hail Mary, they now call it the butt fumble and Hail Mary is what the Jets have. The Falcons beat the Saints, so now the Falcons, with a losing record at the top of the division at 5-6. The Steelers beat the Bengals 16-10. Bengals are 5-6, no Joe Burrow. The Steelers keep finding ways to win. Their offense is much better without the offensive coordinator who they fired. Jaguars beat the Texans. You see the field goal by Matt Amendola, former Chiefs kicker, for a short period of time. 58-yarder, hit the crossbar, bounced back. He was that close to making it. Colts, if the season ended today, the Colts would be in the playoffs with Gardner Minshew. Everybody raise your hand if you have that one.
Put your hand down if you raise it.
Exactly, because you're lying. 27-20, Colts over the Buccaneers. The Patriots have a world of problems. They missed a 35-yard field goal to force overtime. Giants win 10-7. Patriots 2-9. Titans beat the Panthers 17-10. Frank Reich, in his first year as head coach, they drafted Bryce Young instead of C.J. Stroud. Bryce Young's not had the greatest protection this year. It's not on Bryce Young. But C.J. Stroud's having a big year for the Texans. And Frank Reich, after 11 games, has been fired in his first year. Today, it's been broken. He's been fired.
Yeah.
In fairness, what is he supposed to do? But anyway.
Exactly. I think most of the teams were going to pick Bryce Young over C.J. Stroud, so it's hard to...
Yeah, how do you blame him?
It's like...
And Bryce Young may still end up being a great quarterback. We don't know.
Exactly.
Rams beat the Cardinals 37-14. The Broncos have won 5 in a row. They're 6-5. Broncos knocking on the door of the playoffs. And they've beaten some good teams during the stretch. They beat the Chiefs. They beat the Bills. They beat the Browns 29-12. The Browns with their backup quarterback, who then left and got hurt with a concussion. Chiefs win 31-17. Raiders. Raiders 5-7. The Bills just fine. You know, the Bills and the Chargers are really the same type of team nowadays.
Right, yeah.
The Bills had 200 more yards of offense yesterday. They ran almost 100 plays. The Chiefs ran 20 more plays than the Eagles Monday night and outgained them by 100 yards, and the Eagles just find ways to win. Eventually, that's going to catch up to the Eagles, in my opinion. 37-34, Eagles beat the Bills. Bills are 6-6. Do you know the Chiefs, the rest of their schedule, don't have a winning record on their schedule?
Yeah, because I heard Kevin Harlan talking about that at the end of the game. He's like, if the Bills lose, there's no winning teams on the rest of the Chiefs' schedule.
That is true.
At Raven, this moment.
The Ravens have the Niners yet, and they have somebody else. They got to play the Steelers yet. The Ravens got a tougher schedule, and they're a half game ahead of the Chiefs. They beat the Chargers last night 20-10. Monday Night Football tonight, Bears-Vikings, go Josh Dobbs. Get me 26.33 points. No reason why I came up with that number whatsoever. One quick thing about the NFL, and then we'll take a break. So Tom Brady comes out and talks about the mediocrity of National Football League, which I thought was pretty rich, considering the guy hasn't even been retired for, 6 months? And Alex Smith on NFL Countdown, whatever, he went after Brady on this one. And he said, listen, you know, first of all, you've not been retired very long. So the league was mediocre just last year, apparently, right?
Yeah.
And you were part of that. Secondly, you were in one of the weakest divisions many years, year in and year out. And a lot of people agree with Alex Smith, and there are people that had blowback towards Alex Smith and said, you know, well, Alex Smith didn't beat Tom Brady. It's like, that's not the point, people. But people said, well, even if he was in a bad division, he still won all those playoff games and won Super Bowls, which is a good comeback point. It's a good counterpoint. But the obvious thing that Alex Smith should have said, and everybody should have said, and everybody somehow missed it, the Buccaneers had a losing record last year and won their division. He was the epitome, Tom Brady, of mediocrity last year. Like, all you got to do is go back. You don't have to go back to when they played back in the day when the Jets and all the Bills and Jets were horrible and the Patriots only good team in AFC East that Alex Smith did, which he has a point to an extent. All you have to do is point back to the last year he played.
Yeah.
They were 8-9 and won their division. This year, that same division, 5-6 leads the division, which we all knew was going to be like that again this year.
Yeah.
So don't act like we're shocked by this. But if you really wanted to point to rebut and counter Tom Brady's argument that the league is soft now, who he was the one whining about everything he wanted to get every time he was touched, and he benefited from those rules more than anybody. See the Chris Jones barely touching your face mask in the AFC title game, or the blah BS roughing the quarterback last year that cost that really decided the division and gave the Bucs a win last year against the Falcons. It is kind of rich to me that Tom Brady's going to come out so quickly after he's retired and talk about how the league isn't very good. What, because you're not in it? You weren't very good last year, Tommy. And the Buccaneers had a losing record. I'm pretty sure they're 8-9. And they got a home game. And they got a home game against the Cowboys and got destroyed because they were a fraud, because they were in a bad division. So if you want to talk about mediocrity, we don't need to. In fairness, Alex Smith, Alex, you missed the boat on that one too. All you had to do is say, the last season Tom Brady played, he was on an 8-9 team, and he benefited from that mediocrity. I didn't see him saying, you know what, we'll forfeit this game and give it to somebody else.
Yeah.
So I think it's really rich for Tom Brady to say those type of things. How convenient it is for him.
Yeah.
Coming up on the Sports Ticket after the break, we'll take a look at KU and K-State, and what a weird game for K-State to lose on Senior Day. This is the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive and Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair.
Does your vehicle have a leak, squeak, or rattle? Is there an annoying warning light shining at you from the dash? I'm Elijah at Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit. If you have an automotive issue, don't just live with it because you're afraid of what it might cost to get it fixed. We offer a 15-minute no-wrench inspection for free, so you can get a professional opinion about your problem without spending a dime. Call or stop by today. We're happy to take a look at almost anything for free. That's Kiefer Brothers Automotive, just south of the courthouse in Beloit, and online at kieferbrothers.com.
Bean coming up to change the play here with 5 seconds on the play clock. 10 minutes to go on the game clock. They hand off to Hyshaw, rushing right side. No, it's a fake. It's Jason Bean, and he's gone. Jason Bean to the end zone from 50 yards out. A second house call of the day. Jason Bean, are you kidding me?
What a game for Jason Bean. He was fantastic. But the second straight game that he's played the whole game, he played well at Iowa State. He played well at Cincinnati. He got knocked out in the first quarter against Texas Tech. I mean, if you're a KU fan, you do have a legitimate reason to think this. I'm not saying it would have happened, but you have a legitimate reason to think, had Bean played the whole Texas Tech game, they would have won. Had he played against K-State, they would have won. You have reasons to say that. Now, I don't know. I definitely think you beat Texas Tech with Bean, because that was the whole game plan, was Bean, and then he got hurt. The K-State game, K-State, if they know he's going to be playing, is going to prepare for Jason Bean. The game plan is going to be different. So we don't, you know, I don't know. I mean, obviously Bean's better than Cole Ballard. I don't think anybody's going to argue about that. Ifs, ands, and buts, that's in the rearview mirror. But Kansas is 8-4 for the first time. They have 8 wins since 2008. Lance Leipold, what he's done is amazing. And Jason Bean was fantastic against Cincinnati. They were down early. They scored 21 in the second, 21 in the fourth. He threw touchdown passes to Mason Fairchild of Andale, Jared Casey of Plainville, Devin Neal of Lawrence. There were all these Kansas kids scoring touchdowns against Cincinnati. It was kind of weird. And Devin Neal had another great game. 10 carries, 106 yards, 2 touchdowns. Beans was 13-17 for 250. He has amazing speed once he gets the outside. 4 carries, 90 yards, couple touchdowns. Lance Leipold on his senior quarterback, and what he was able to accomplish on Saturday.
You know, he bounced back really well, you know, missing time, and I could see a difference. We all could see a difference. Monday at practice, kind of had some bounce back in his step. He attacked the week really well. Thought he was extremely accurate the first half, and he had those big runs there that kind of put, you know, a big difference in this game.
KU finishes the regular season 8-4 overall, 5-4 in the Big 12. We'll see where they go for a bowl game. We won't know that officially till Sunday, although it might get leaked out. The Guaranteed Rate Bowl in Phoenix, which is the day after Christmas, is where many people are projecting the Jayhawks to play against. Either Northwestern is one that's been mentioned, maybe Wisconsin, maybe even a Maryland, I guess. So we'll see what happens. But KU has a chance to have a 9-win season. And Jason Bean was just fabulous the other night against Cincinnati. And, boy, aren't the Jayhawks glad that he came back. Where would this team be without Jason Bean? And Jalen Daniels, I don't know what the heck's going on there. But the guys, why is Jalen Daniels dressed up in uniform?
I don't know.
1 week he is.
He's already said he's done.
Right.
So, like, what are we doing?
Well, he didn't technically say he's done. He said he's coming back next year.
Or his comment, basically.
Right.
I guess I'm reading into it. He didn't actually say he was done. But
right.
That all to me meant he's not playing again this year.
During the broadcast, he said, what happens if Jalen Daniels is ready to go for the bowl game? I'm like, you go with Jason Bean. I mean, no, you don't go with Jalen Daniels. This is Jason Bean's team. Jalen Daniels, if he is healthy enough to play in the bowl game and Bean gets hurt, fine. But this is Jason Bean's team. He deserves to start the bowl game. He should be the guy. I don't think Jalen Daniels. I said it 2 weeks after Daniels got hurt. I said it on this very show. I don't think Jalen Daniels is going to play again this year. And I had people going, oh, you're overreacting. Well, so far I'm looking pretty smart. Yeah. He has not played since then. And there's no sense in him playing the rest of the year, the bowl game, in my opinion. There's no sense in it. Get him ready to go, good to go. I don't understand the back injury where he can walk through a hotel room and mess it up in Austin, but can be on the sideline gyrating and dancing in uniform. I don't understand it. But as my oldest son made a good point, he said, you know, if this is not legitimate and he's being kind of a wimp and this and that, his teammates wouldn't support him. And his teammates have been very supportive of him. So there's got to be some information that we're not being told that eventually we'll find out about. Probably in the middle of next season when he's going awesome, we'll discover it's some weird condition he had. I don't know. But and I know sometimes in the medical stuff, with HIPAA and everything else, who knows what you can actually disclose.
Yeah.
But there's way more to this story with Jalen Daniels, I think, in regards to the health part. There are people sitting here going, well, he's gonna redshirt, he's gonna transfer, which maybe he still will. He says he won't. I don't think he will. I think he's gonna be at KU. But there's something medically that I don't know, some reason they don't want it out there, because otherwise it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But Jason Bean has been fantastic. He's the MVP of this team, him and Devin Neal, and he was terrific against Cincinnati. So KU wins, and they end up having the same record as K-State to end the regular season. Who saw that coming for the year? We talk about the ceiling for KU being 8 wins. We thought K-State, the ceiling was 10 or 11. K-State loses in the snow to Iowa State in a weird game.
Third and 16. Trips to the top of your screen. Underneath, plenty of room. Here's Knoll. Jalen Knoll down the sideline. Another big play for Knoll. His second of the night. 82 yards.
That was the deciding score, breaking a 35-35 tie. K-State ends the regular season 8-4 overall, 6-3 in the Big 12. So the tiebreaker, after all of these complainings till your dreams come true, didn't even apply. Although some people could argue, well, maybe we were flat because we knew we were eliminated. I don't buy that for a second.
No.
That was senior night. Okay, that's disrespectful to the seniors if you're going to sit there and hold on to that one. K-State, it didn't matter, the tiebreaker. Oklahoma State beat Oklahoma head-to-head. They were tied with Oklahoma. They got in barely because they somehow came back to beat BYU. It's just another close, disappointing loss for Kansas State. This one, they could have been undefeated this year at home. Five of Iowa State's 6 touchdowns went for 60 yards or more. 4 went 70 or more yards. K-State had 102 plays in this game. Iowa State, 35. K-State, 42 minutes, time of possession. Iowa State, 18. K-State had 32 first downs. Iowa State had 10. Iowa State had more turnovers and penalty yards than K-State. Iowa State never was in the red zone. K-State was in the red zone 7 times, and they scored on 6 of those 7 opportunities. It defies logic. I've never seen a box score as crazy as that one. 102-35 in plays, and yet Iowa State almost outgained Kansas State in yards. Big plays, big plays, big plays, big plays. And Iowa State was without their top 2 running backs, and their third-string running back looked like the next Heisman Trophy winner.
Yeah.
K-State's defense was downright horrible. And before you sit here and blame the weather conditions, both teams had to play in them.
Yeah.
So that's a weak excuse. Here's Chris Klieman, and talks about how bad the defense was.
Really disappointing to end the way we did for those seniors. We were not good enough on defense night. It was a very, very poor performance on defense. Yep, the footings was hard. It was difficult. But we can't give up big plays like we gave up, and that's that was the difference tonight. Shouldn't lose a football game like that. But we did, because we did not tackle.
Sama had 276 yards, three touchdowns, 16 carries, including the first play from scrimmage. Jalen Noel had 160 yards receiving. Will Howard threw for 288 and a score. Had a costly interception midway through the fourth, down seven, but then had opportunity. Got a chance coming back the other way, and then eventually they couldn't score and turned the ball over on downs at the Iowa State 18. So K-State, we'll see where they go bowl-wise. There were Pop-Tarts Bowl, believe it or not. That's the name of a bowl.
The Pop-Tarts. I was at the game the last time they were at home, and I saw their rep there, and he had a Pop-Tarts logo mm-hmm. on his polo, and I was like, is there a Pop-Tarts Bowl? Yep, sure is.
Mm-hmm. There is. There's a Pop-Tarts Bowl, and so there were representatives from that bowl that were at the K-State game. There was Liberty Bowl representatives that were there as well. So we'll see how this all shakes out. I mean, it is interesting to see, you know, Kansas winning like they did, and they're up and coming, and we'll see how they travel their bowl game. I think they traveled all right last year to the Liberty Bowl. They're not going to go there again because they played Arkansas, so they're going somewhere different more than likely. It'll be interesting to see where K-State goes after their loss, because I think a lot of people thought K-State was going to win that game. So does that change the pecking order of how bowls pick their team because of that loss? Or are they already pretty much set on who's going to go where? And it's just, we don't care necessarily that you're in a certain position. We know K-State will travel. Will K-State travel as much now, though? Because you were the Big 12 champs last year, and you went to the Sugar Bowl. Now this year, you're going to a bowl game that you didn't expect to go to because you thought you're going to be in the Big 12 title game again, as I thought as well. Is there maybe not as much of a travel for K-State for a bowl game to where that could affect them and how and where they go on a bowl?
Yeah, I think historically, no matter where they finish, what bowl they go to, they travel.
They do.
Like they, now, you know, some of those games, they're going to travel more. You know,
right.
For the Fiesta Bowl in 97, they traveled more probably, right? Because this was something new. This was a big deal. And the Sugar Bowl was a big deal last year, right? And so, I don't think that the people that are selecting the teams for these bowls are going to change their mind, because I think K-State's going to travel no matter what. I mean, if you can get, 10,000, I think you're feeling good as a bowl representative of who you're picking to play
right.
in your game. And anything after that is probably great, I would imagine.
So the Pop-Tart Bowl, that's where K-State going?
That's what it looks like right now.
Where's that game at? Orlando?
Yeah, that's in Orlando, yeah.
I'd rather go Orlando than Memphis.
No, oh, yeah. Like Memphis is fun, but that place is not good to play in. No. It's a terrible stadium, and they've been there enough.
Yeah.
And it's like, let's do something new. And Orlando would definitely be something new in a time of the year where people would want to go to Orlando.
That's true.
And so I think they'll travel if they go to Orlando.
Kansas going to Phoenix and K-State going to Orlando. There might not be anybody left in the state
exactly.
of Kansas during the holidays. Anything you want to say about the loss?
It was, you're talking about like people being negative on social media, like, and let it breathe. I let it breathe until that 82 yard touchdown. And I was like, when did this team forget how to tackle?
Right.
And when the Raiders had that big run and a couple missed tackles yesterday, I was like, I can't do this for a second day in a row. Let's lock it up and start tackling here, Chiefs. I saw this bad enough last night. I don't need 2 days in a row of non-tackling and giving up big plays. It was absurd. Like every time, like I was at home and I was watching the game, but also enjoying time with the family, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll be talking, and like my nephews were putting ornaments on the tree at the time too, and their mom wanted to get that up since she had grandkids to help her. And every time I would look at Cooper or Walker putting something on the tree, I'd be like, dude, did they score again? What are we doing here? Like, and it was. I had to rewind sometimes to say, like, another 70-yard touchdown run. Mm-hmm. I looked away for 2 seconds, and they're in the end zone. And the third and 16, 82-yard touchdown was obviously the icing on the cake and just the exclamation point of the way the night went. It was Will Lee literally pushed a dude forward.
Yes, he did.
One of those runs by Sam or whatever.
That was not.
Like, instead of wrapping up, let's get, like, he thought he was going to have to stiff arm him, and Will just pushed him forward and gave him a speed boost.
He did. It was a turbo boost.
Like, what are we doing tonight, man?
It was not pretty, that's for sure. I mean, it's kind of cool, the snow, the look of it and all.
I told everybody, I was like, it'd be nice to be there just to see this game. And, I say that as I would have had a luxurious spot inside. But, that was It was a good, an interesting look, but it was not fun to watch.
You know, and then here's the other thing too. And I talked about the cesspool of negativity on social media, and then, you know, K-State loses, so people aren't in a good mood. I get that, and then people taking their shots at Will Howard. And you know, I'm going to sit here and say this. Will Howard did a heck of a lot for Kansas State. More than anybody ever dreamt he would do.
Yeah.
There were people that wanted him run out of town last year or thought he would transfer, and he could have easily done it when Adrian Martinez was brought in. Will Howard loves Kansas State University. And he was absolute class act. I mean, granted, he threw his helmet and he was ticked off at the end because he wanted to win so badly on senior day. But he signed autographs as he left the field. The video showing him looking back one last time at the field is, I mean, it gives you goosebumps. Because you know that's he's closing a chapter in his life. And at least that's what it appears anyway. And then he thanked the media right after the game before anybody asked any questions. And some of the media has not been good to him.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a guy that did everything right. What, you know, Kansas State fans, you're no worse than Chiefs fans or KU fans or Husker fans or whoever it may be. The fan bases have their good fans and then they have their really, really bad ones. And it seems like we hear more from the bad ones than the good ones. That's just how life is, right? We hear them from the loud minority instead of the silent majority. But if you're sitting here today, I mean, Will Howard overachieved. Will Howard overachieved. He saved your bacon last year and helped you win a Big 12 championship and get a Sugar Bowl appearance against Alabama. I mean, without Will Howard, where is this team last year? I mean, I know the backup's always sexy to go put Avery Johnson in. Listen, Avery, the way he's built, I don't know if he can last a season if he's going to run it 15 times a game or more. He needs to put on some bulk. We don't know if he can throw at the college level. We don't yet. I think he can, but we don't know for sure. And so as soon as things don't go right for Will Howard, it's, well, bring in Avery. And Avery had one great game where he ran most of the time against Texas Tech. Will Howard then played great football. The next few weeks played great football. And still played pretty good football the other night. I mean, you're in snowy conditions, and he had just one turnover. He had one interception. So when Mahomes has one interception, we like blow it off. Yeah, you know, it's Mahomes. Why doesn't Howard, I mean, I know he's not Mahomes, but Howard's established something in his career. And Will Howard makes one mistake, but how about the defense making 1,000 mistakes? You know, why are people after the game, believe it or not, there were people after the game blaming Will Howard for this loss? Because no matter when the quarterback, no matter how great he is in a game, if they lose the game, the quarterback gets the blame for some reason. And then when they win the game, sometimes they get too much credit, sometimes they don't get enough credit. But the reason K-State lost this game had nothing to do with Will Howard. Will Howard, last I checked, can't tackle, can't play defense. The reason K-State lost the game has nothing to do with 18. The reason they lost this game is because their defense was horrific. Can we agree on that?
I had a person saying some stuff about Will's interception late in the game, and I'm like, I don't want to hear about it, dude. And there's some different motivation on part of that, but I just said, all I'm looking at, like, my headspace at the end of this game is just the defense gave up 5 touchdowns for 60 or more yards and 4 for 70 or more. I can't blame anybody on offense, on an offense that scored 35 points.
Yeah, in those conditions. Against a good defense.
Yeah. And everything that they did on that side of the ball.
102 plays.
I'm not going to negate all that with one interception at a bad time. It was an interception at a bad time. Absolutely, it was. But did they lose the game because of that? Absolutely not.
They did not score off that turnover. Then they went down and had a chance to tie it.
Yeah, there's nothing in my headspace that says that I should blame anybody for this loss other than the defense.
Yeah.
I'm not going to. It's just not going to happen.
Any logical person would understand that. But when you lose, a lot of fans are not logical.
Yeah.
That word does not apply.
And I think everybody understands, even the people that are saying whatever they might about Will Howard, they understand defense is number one on the problem list on Saturday night. There's nobody that can dispute that. But I'm not even mentioning anybody else.
But let me throw this out at you, because you brought this up a couple times, and I'm gonna present it now. And obviously there are K-State fans that care more about this loss than you do. because you've established that if we're not winning a national championship or going to college football playoff, then what's the point? And so you knew, everybody knew, at least we think everybody knew, going into the K-State game at kickoff that they were not going to the Big 12 title game. Uh-huh. So not only do you not have the national championship or the college football playoff, which is what you're shooting for as a fan, and you said Big 12 is nice and all, but, you know, there's bigger fish to fry. You're not going to the Big 12 title game. So why are fans so up in an uproar about losing this game? Because whether you, you know, what's the difference between being 9-4 and 10-3? Right? Because they're 8-4. Yeah. They can be 9-3. So they can be 9-4 now with a bowl win. Where they won the game at Iowa State, it'd be 9-3. What, a 10-win season? Well, they don't give out trophies for 10-win seasons. It's nice, don't get me wrong. And especially if you're a program that's trying to build up like Kansas.
Yeah.
You get to a 10-win season, that's monumental. K-State just had a 10-win season. So why are K-State fans so riled up about losing a game that really had no impact on anything? It had no impact on the Big 12 race. It has no impact on the college football playoff. We just talked about how it probably had no impact on where you go for a bowl game, and you really shouldn't care about the bowl game that much if you're all about winning at all costs. So why are you all riled up about Will Howard making a bad throw? Why are you all riled up about the defense being so god-awful when really your loss doesn't change anything other than your overall record?
You're going to have to ask those people because for me, I'm in the same spot I've always been, right? Like this, like I'm not going to win a recruiting battle because I went 9-3 instead of 8-4. I don't believe that.
I agree with you.
If I go 9-3 and I played in the Big 12 championship game, maybe I'll
helps
get
a little bit.
Maybe I'll get somebody else that, that maybe, oh, you played in a Big 12 championship, be cool to play in Arlington, right?
Sure.
But if I go 12-0 and then I win the Big 12 championship in Arlington and then I play in the college, regardless of what happens in the college football playoff,
right,
my recruiting goes through the roof.
Sure.
Okay. Right. So it's like, I don't know. You're going to have to ask those people because, and I think for most people, it's about getting to 10 wins, which I don't care anymore about that part for K-State. It's like you've been, how many they had with like 6 out of 7 years in the late 90s, early 2000s, they won 11 games.
Right.
6 out of 7 years, they won 11. Like, why do I need 10?
Yeah.
Like, what's 8, 9, 10? What does it mean? Like, again, people that are listening to me probably don't like what I'm saying if you don't agree with me. But what does it mean?
Yeah.
It doesn't mean anything. Now, again, like, I'm watching the games, and I said this when we initially had this conversation. I'm watching the games. I still want my team to win. Don't get that part twisted. Like, I want my team to win. I'm cheering for them to win. I'm frustrated when the defense is giving up 5 touchdowns of 60-plus yards. But am I going to lose sleep when the game's over because we went 8-4 instead of 9-3? No, I'm not. I'm frustrated in the moment, right? But when the game's over, I can't sit here and discuss this for 2 hours afterwards like some people do. It's just not in my and that's anything though, really.
A lot of teams would love to be 8-4.
Yeah, for sure.
Ask Nebraska.
Kansas
fans
is excited about it.
Yeah, ask Nebraska fans. They'd love to be 8-4 right now. You know, it's funny because I kind of like split the hairs here or straddle the fence a little bit with your thinking versus the way the K-State fan base on social media apparently was thinking. And that is that if K-State lost that game Saturday night and it cost them a berth in the Big 12 title game, then I totally understand K-State fans being really riled up. Now, you wouldn't understand it quite as much because you're saying, listen, that's not as big a deal to you. I understand it.
For sure. I definitely understand.
And that. I understand being, man, we could have gone back to back. And you've kind of said, well, you know, that's nice in all conference titles, but I want to win the big one. And I get that too. But in this case, you had nothing on the line other than sending your seniors out with a win. And I'm not sitting here trying to tell you the
undefeated season at home.
Right.
What does that mean?
What's that mean? Yeah. I mean, to me, if they lost a home game earlier in the year and then won senior day, that'd be a better scenario because then the seniors went out with a win. Mm-hmm. I mean, if there's anything bad to feel bad about, it's the fan base should be feeling bad that the seniors went out with a loss instead of worrying about whether they're going to have a 9 or 10 win season and getting all mad at Will Howard for making one bad pass. I mean, in the scheme of things, the big picture things, that loss for K-State meant nothing. And the scheme of things for Iowa State, the win, I don't think meant much either. I mean, maybe a little better bowl game because you're 7-5 instead of 6-6. But Kansas State, as you said, they aspire to do more than just go to a regular bowl game. So,
yeah, it's not hard to figure that part of it out.
I'm with you. All right, so we said the Huskers love to be 8-4. There's a reason for that.
Good snap, good hold, kick is on its way. It is good!
and Iowa has won. His time has expired. Marshall Meter, in his first field goal attempt of the year, comes through for the Hawkeyes.
Well, I'm going to trademark Chargers going to Charger, and now I want to trademark Husker's going to Husker. It is mind-boggling. It's got to be so. I am just thankful that I am not a Husker fan. I am so thankful. Now, back in the 90s, it'd been great. I'm watching this game, and I was making mistakes. And they throw an interception. Wasn't it an interception? Nebraska got the ball. So now Nebraska has a chance to go get a field goal. And then Chuba Purdy throws a ball to a linebacker that didn't even move. And Nebraska went from having the ball under a minute to go in regulation, a chance to go win with a field goal, to losing the game in regulation. I mean, it's only what the Huskers can do. They were 5-3. They lost two of their last four at home against teams that they should have beat. Iowa's not that good, okay? They're not that good. Defensively, they're really good. Offensively, they are atrocious. And Nebraska should have won this game. And Iowa's going to play in the Big Ten title game, and they're going to get destroyed, in my opinion, because they can't score.
Yeah, they should.
But Iowa's not that good. They're just in a bad division. And Wisconsin is down, so that helps. Michigan State is down. I think Michigan State's in that division. Maybe not. But anyway, the bottom line is Wisconsin's down. They're the one that usually is fighting for that division. The Huskers obviously been down for a long time. Seventh straight losing season. Seventh straight losing season in Nebraska. They're not bowl eligible again. Do you know that they have the longest streak of losing seasons in a row of any Power 5 university in the country now?
It doesn't surprise me.
Dear Lord. So Nebraska loses. They finish 5-7. Still a step up above Scott Frost, maybe, but not saying a lot. If they find a quarterback, they'll be all right. Mark my words. They find a quarterback in that division they're in, they'll be okay. Although next year, do they go divisions or is it unbalanced? Yeah, I think it's unbalanced.
They're going divisionless next year.
So this was a great opportunity for Nebraska, and they absolutely just... So Iowa moves on to Big Ten title game. Michigan beat Ohio State 30-24. Great game. Michigan's 12-0. Ohio State's 11-1. Ryan Day is the head coach of Ohio State. His record as a head coach is 56-7. Anybody else want a coach that wins 56 out of 63 games in the country? Anybody? Anyone? Bueller? I'd say A&M would be okay with it.
Most people would.
I think
like
Nebraska
that.
Would take it. I know Kansas would take it. Ryan Day is 56-7 as a head coach of Ohio State. That's a winning percentage of 89%, and he's playing in a very tough conference in America. If he keeps this pace for five more seasons, Ryan Day will be ranked ahead of Newt Rockne in first place all-time in winning percentage among college football coaches with 10-plus seasons as a head coach. And yet today, there are people that want him fired because he's lost to Michigan 3 years in a row. And this year, the game could have gone either way. Very close. Sometimes you win them, sometimes you don't. He's 1-6, I think, against top five teams. Well, listen, if Marvin Harrison doesn't get hurt last year, he probably is winning. He probably has a national championship.
Yeah.
Because I think they beat TCU in the final. They had Georgia beat. But nobody points to that. The biggest mistake Ohio State could possibly make is firing Ryan Day.
Because he doesn't seem smart.
Just all you got to do Ohio State is look down to Lincoln, Nebraska. Nebraska fired coaches, not one, but two coaches after 9-win seasons. You don't think they'd like to be 9-4 right now? I remember on this very show, I believe it was, when they fired Bo Pelini, I said, be careful what you wish for because you may eventually look back and say 9-4 would be great. I remember we talked about
it. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because Husker fans took things for granted. K-State fans a little bit are taking some things for granted, too. And KU fans eventually be the same way if football continues to be this way. That's just the way expectations change. That's why Chiefs fans take everything for granted because they're spoiled rotten now. They fired coaches after 9-win seasons. How did that go for Nebraska? You're gonna fire Ryan Day when he's 56-7 as a head coach because he's lost 3 in a row to Michigan? So what do you want to do? Go ahead and hire a guy next year that goes 6-5 and beats Michigan in the big game, upsets them, and so 7-5 is okay with you? What do you value more? Being in a college football playoff race and having a chance in the final minutes to beat Michigan every year, or being eliminated from Big Ten title contention and all you're hanging on is to beat Michigan as an upset in the final week of the season? Which would you prefer? Who knows? There might be some people that prefer the latter. I don't know. And I would say you need to have your heads reexamined. 56-7. We're getting to a point in society and sports where nothing's good enough. Nothing is ever good enough. If Marvin, you know, we talked about this before. If Steph Curry takes the shot for Davidson against Bill Self in 2008 and makes it, or Derrick Rose makes a free throw, or if they foul Mario Chalmers before attempting a three, is Bill Self the head coach at Kansas today? And you may say, well, that's ludicrous. What are you talking about? Well, you got to go back. You can't count the future. Okay? In 2008, Bill Self was a guy that couldn't win the big one. He couldn't get to the Final Four. Okay? He lost the Elite Eight the year before. He lost the Elite Eight a few times at Kansas. He lost the Elite Eight at Illinois. He lost the Elite Eight with Tulsa. He couldn't get over the hump. And then he finally did. And then they were one of four number one seeds, and they played well, but not well against Memphis, and caught breaks in that championship game. Bill Self is set for life now, right? Everything worked. Yeah. But what if that game went differently? If Memphis makes the free throw, or they foul Chalmers, if they don't blow a nine-point lead in the final 2-12, what if Steph Curry takes a shot instead of passing the ball in the Elite Eight game? Bill Self, maybe he's never made a Final Four. Next thing you know, he's gone. Where would KU basketball be today? And you may say, that seems like a stretch. No, it really isn't. Because there were a lot of talk at the time that Bill Self can't win the big one. He can't get him Final Four. There was a knock on him. And so, Ryan Day, if they decide to fire him tomorrow, he's 56-7. He's 1-6 against top five teams. But all he does is has a team in playoff contention or makes the playoff. Last year, Marvin Harrison doesn't get dinged and had to leave the game with a supposed concussion. If Marvin Harrison doesn't get dinged, Ohio State beats Georgia last year. There's no doubt about it. They were up double digits when he went out, and then they couldn't score after that. If Marvin Harrison doesn't get dinged, Ohio State is more than likely your national champion, and we aren't even if Ryan Day would have lost this game again, nobody's talking about firing him.
No.
Nobody's talking about firing him for losing three times in Michigan, because last year, despite losing in Michigan, they still made the college football playoff and should have beat Georgia. And if Harrison doesn't get hurt, they probably do. And then they probably would have rolled TCU and they would have been national champions. So see what one little thing can do? One guy getting nicked up or a ding to the head may have cost Ohio State a national championship, and Ryan Day would have a lot more leeway today, even though nothing has changed in the overall scheme of things in regards to his record against Michigan. But if they would have beat Georgia last year and won the national title, which you say, I say if, biggest word in the English dictionary, but they were that close, it'd be a whole different take on Ryan Day, even though he's lost three in a row in Michigan. They'd be like, well, yeah, we can't beat Michigan. It sucks. But at least we have our national championship. Ryan Day's a hell of a coach. And I just don't understand. I mean, I understand to an extent the angst of losing to your rival 3 years in a row. I get that. But to me, this would be the equivalent of saying, okay, Kansas, K-State have this amazing rivalry in football, right? And Lance Leipold has lost to Kansas State 3 years in a row when they're both top five institutions. Well, you better fire Leipold. How smart is that? Or if Chris Klieman is going up against Leipold and loses three straight years and both teams are ranked in the top 10 or the top five, we got to fire Klieman. He can't beat Kansas. That's ludicrous. That's ludicrous. But that's what they're talking about a little bit, Ohio is and Columbus, is Ryan Day. Maybe we should fire him. And who are you going to bring in that's going to do a better job?
Yeah, it's like everything that I've talked about here with, you know, you value the chance to play for a national championship over the third Big 12 conference, you know, whatever it is, right? Going 7-5 and beating Michigan, would you rather have that or lose to Michigan and still be in the playoff and have a chance to win a national championship still? Like, there was literally no correlation last year. I mean, they had to play the number one team, but they should have beat the number one team in the college football playoff. So you're sitting in a spot still to win a national title. You lost to Michigan. Who cares?
You still have a chance
to win a national championship out of one of four teams.
Well, that's what TCU did. They lost a Big 12 title game, and they still had
absolutely
a chance.
Absolutely. And so it's like, you know, you can complain about it, and you know, I think people still think that, you know, had it not been a Michigan-Ohio State rematch, Ohio State was probably the number three team last year, right?
Yeah.
But TCU got the spot because they obviously didn't want the rematch. And so you're in a spot where you're top three or four at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you complaining about it? Like, just move on and beat the next team, which you almost did. And so you're sitting here complaining about stuff while you're one of the top five teams in the country. I can't comprehend that kind of thinking, right? Like, now, the Ron Prince kind of thinking can never beat KU, Missouri, or Nebraska,
well, sure,
and you're
different.
Losing games all the time.
Well, that's whole different. Yeah.
It's just not the same thing, like losing to your rivals when you're losing every game.
Right.
That's not the case. I mean, seven losses and three of them are to Michigan. Like, that means he's only lost four other games. And
one was last year.
One was in the playoff, right?
He's had a couple. He had a national championship game.
And so it's like,
he gets them there.
You're losing games at the end of the season when you have a chance to have that trophy when a,
and they're not weak sisters,
you know,
he's playing.
Whatever, 120-some teams don't have that chance.
It's just amazing to me. It's like, you know, Ryan, here's the thing. Ryan Day didn't get enough credit. You know, some coaches stumble and lose a game they shouldn't. His teams don't. And then they lose in a tight one to Michigan. Like, if you get a new coach in and they do a great job and they beat Michigan, but they stumbled against Maryland early in the year, you're probably going to be in worse shape because it's a worse loss. It's amazing to me. Amazing. Washington got the field goal as time expired. I mentioned the fourth down and one gamble that worked out for them in their own territory. They beat Washington State 24-21, final edition of the Apple Cup. And that's the end of the Pac-12, other than the Pac-12 title game on Friday night between number 4 Washington and number 6 Oregon. Oregon beat Oregon State 31-7. Georgia with a win over Georgia Tech. They're 12-0. They'll face number 8 Alabama in the SEC championship game. Florida State 12-0. They won with their backup quarterback at Florida. They'll take on Louisville in the ACC championship game. I'm watching the Alabama game, and I'm cheering for Alabama to lose. And Auburn does one of the dumbest things I've seen in defensively. If you saw the final play, it's a fourth and goal from the 31. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, there's two. I understand not bringing a blitz. I get it. Now, see this Spagnuolo, I guarantee you would have brought a blitz.
Uh-huh.
Jalen Monroe's not a great passer. So, and he hurts you with your legs. But do you really think he's going to run 31 yards for a touchdown when you got everybody in the end zone? So what they did was they had 8 guys in coverage on 5 receivers, which means you can't double everybody. They rushed 3, but I say that loosely. They had the guys rushing the end, and the guy in the middle was playing as a spy because apparently Jalen Monroe was going to avoid 11 defensive players and score from 31 yards out. That was the dumbest part of it. Like, I'm like, if you're going to have 3 rush, have them all actually rush.
Yeah.
Secondly, if you're not going to have all these guys rush and you got a spy, first of all, that's stupid because put all 11 guys at the goal line. I'm serious.
Yeah.
Put all 11 guys at the goal line and you say, 2 guys got every guy coming down here. And the offensive linemen are a waste of time for Alabama. So now you got 11 guys guarding 5. But you put them all at the goal line. As soon as Jalen Monroe crosses line of scrimmage, which I think you could react by the time he hits the 25, which is 6 yards past the line of scrimmage, you know that all you got to do is go tackle him because he can't go backwards and get behind the line and throw the ball.
Yeah.
So why were they so worried about Monroe running the ball on a fourth and goal from the 31? Why did they waste one of their 11 defenders spying the guy? You don't think you could stop Monroe at the goal line with all the other defenders, the other 8 back there?
Yeah.
Like, as soon as he goes past the line of scrimmage, you don't have to defend the receiver anymore. You don't have to.
No.
Unless they come way behind the line of scrimmage, do a lateral.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it was one of the dumbest defensive schemes I've seen. Like, I understood the rushing 3, drop an 8 if you're rushing 3 legitimately. They weren't. So then either bring the heat or drop all 11. Like, either bring the heat, you're all in, or drop 11 and put them all back for the Hail Mary. And nothing. Then that play doesn't happen. Now, is the ball tipped 3 times and they do a Hail Mary against 11 defenders and they catch it and they still win? Maybe that was going to happen no matter what. But it was like, what is the point wasting a defender and just standing there dancing and tap-toeing? That's all the guy was doing. Not even trying to get to the quarterback. Worried about Monroe running 31 yards. That was the waste of a defensive player. Horrible.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. Like,
it was bad.
It
You do start to wonder.
No matter how you give up that score, it's going to be bad. But it's like put yourself in a better position to maybe stop it.
My oldest son were watching the game, and he said, "This just goes to prove this thing's rigged." That's what he said. It's like, why in the world would you do what they just did? He thinks it's rigged. I'm like, maybe it is. Alabama benefits from it. College playoff picture. Georgia wins, and Michigan wins, and Washington wins, and Florida State wins. You've got four undefeated teams, and it's easy.
Yeah.
But if Georgia loses to Alabama, Michigan should win. I think Oregon's going to beat Washington. Then you start to have some chaos. Now, to me, Oregon's in the playoff if they win, because right now they are the highest-ranked one-loss team. So they should be in. Okay? So if the Pac-12 winner is in, and you know Georgia is in, if they lose Alabama, then do you put Alabama in over Florida State? If Florida State wins the ACC, you'd have two SEC teams, you have a Pac-12, and you have Michigan. So there's where the chaos could start, because to me, if Oregon, now Texas is going to argue, we beat Alabama on the road. Oregon will say, well, we just won the Pac-12 championship against Washington. Yeah, but you lost early in the year. Well, we avenged that loss. So Texas could argue, if they beat Oklahoma State for the Big 12 title game, they could argue that we should be ahead of Oregon. Alabama could argue they'd be ahead of Oregon because they win the SEC, but they really have a hard time arguing they're better in Texas when they lost at home by double digits.
Yeah.
So Alabama, I think, is still in a tough spot. The cleanest way would be Georgia to win. If Georgia wins, Michigan wins, I think we assume that's happening, then Oregon-Washington winner is in. And if Florida State loses, then it's the argument between Texas and Ohio State.
Yeah. Chaos is a lot of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Real fun chaos is, even if Florida State wins, real fun chaos is Alabama, Texas, and Oregon winning. Where are you, what are you going to do with those teams? Like
3-1 lost teams.
Who's the best in your eyes? Like,
right.
And but you get in that situation, which would be the same situation that the previous Big 12 tiebreaker that everybody thought,
right.
Was that K-State was going to be ahead of them, but they lost to, you know, Oklahoma State beat both of those teams. You just say, like, there's no head-to-head with Oregon and Texas, but there is Alabama. So how do you figure this out? Like, how do you decide which one's better?
Right. I think all year.
Sneaky suspicion they're going to decide Alabama's better than all of them.
Yeah.
Alabama and Oregon didn't have to play each other.
Yeah. I don't know. I've watched them play. Oregon's better, but that's just me.
I agree with that.
But we'll see. Now, thing is, if Washington wins, then that takes care of it.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, if Florida State loses, then you got Michigan, Washington, and Georgia loses to Alabama. Florida State loses. You got two spots. Does Georgia and Alabama both get those last two spots to go along with Michigan, Washington, and then and then Oregon would be out because they have two losses. And then that means you'd have Alabama jumping Texas.
Yeah.
Scenario?
And the scenario, too.
I think that's a very plausible scenario.
You know, and it's a possibility that could happen. You know, if you get a, you know, Alabama beats Georgia type deal, are you automatically in this situation putting Georgia in over Texas, too, right? Like, how you doing all this?
That's true.
And so that could be interesting, too.
I think they would
be. If Alabama would win, I think they would be, too.
Even though they didn't win their conference.
Exactly.
But they didn't play Texas and lose to them.
Obviously, Texas beat Oklahoma State by 30 points or something like that. And I can still see them just, they're on the outside looking in all these scenarios.
Yeah. I think a lot of people want Georgia to win that game just to make sure that Alabama's
out. Yeah, exactly. I don't want Alabama even being a part of this discussion.
The Big 12 title game will be number 7 Texas against number 20 Oklahoma State. Texas crushed Texas Tech 57-7 on Friday. Oklahoma State was down 24-6. They won in double overtime to beat BYU. OU won over TCU 69-45, but they will not be in the Big 12 title game. The MIAA teams fell in the second round in heartbreaking fashion in the second round of the D2 playoffs. Pitt State, my Gorillas, lost at number 2 Grand Valley State 24-21. They're up 21-14, but they had four turnovers. They were up 21-17 through an interception, critical interception late in the fourth, set up the game-winning touchdown drive for Grand Valley State. They beat Pitt State 24-21. But if you thought that was bad, did you see how Central Missouri lost their game?
I didn't. I didn't see any of these games.
So Central Missouri, the Mules out of the MIAA, lost to Harding University at Arkansas 35-34. Harding led 35-21 with 7 minutes to go. And then Central Missouri got an 87-yard touchdown pass. They made the extra point. Then they forced the Bison's only punt of the game. So the Mules got the ball back at the Harding 31. They scored on a touchdown pass with 22 seconds remaining. So they were down 35-34. Central Missouri, instead of going for two in the win, went for the extra point. And why wouldn't you? Their kicker, Luke Dobson, had made every single one of his 67 attempts for extra points. The extra point was blocked by a guy for Harding that had blocked three extra points earlier in the year.
Wow.
And Central Missouri lost on a blocked extra point. Now, that is just wrong. That sucks.
Yeah.
Imagine
that. Yeah.
Imagine the Chiefs
get all
losing
the way here. And
if
then
you can't relate to that, imagine K-State in a Big 12 title game losing on a blocked extra point. Imagine the Chiefs in the Super Bowl tying the Eagles 35-35, or so we think, pending the extra point, and Butker misses or has the extra point blocked, and the Chiefs lose the Super Bowl by 1 point. That's the equivalent. Your season's over. And that's what happened to Central Missouri. What a shame. And for the second time in 10 days, number 5, Iowa, and number 16, K-State met in women's hoops. Gulf Coast Showcase Championship on Sunday. Iowa gets a little bit of redemption. They win 77-70. They led most of the game at double-digit leads. K-State came all the way back and led with 3 minutes remaining by one. Iowa, though, for the first time in three meetings against K-State, won the final 3 minutes. 10-2 run. Caitlin Clark with 32 points. K-State 6-1. Iowa 7-1. Aoka Lee and Serena Sundell at 18 for the Wildcats are still a very, 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 very good basketball team. And wouldn't that be something if they... I saw somebody post, wouldn't it be something if Iowa and K-State met in the Elite Eight for... I'm like, wow, that'd be a heck of a third time this year.
Yeah, I just don't want to see them anymore.
I agree.
Let's just call it good with two matchups this year. Each team 1-1.
Yeah.
Let's play some other teams. The stress that it takes to try to prepare on how to beat Caitlin Clark can't be good.
No.
And so, you know, it validates how good Jeff Mitty's team is this year, I think, to have two real close games against Iowa, even though they didn't win both of them.
Right. And you would think if you get an NCAA tournament game in a situation like the Elite Eight, you don't think, if you believe in things being rigged a little bit, you don't think that they want Caitlin Clark in the Final Four instead of K-State.
Exactly.
So I don't know if I do want that matchup in Elite Eight. But if it happened, it means K-State had a heck of a year.
Absolutely.
No question about that. But maybe they could beat somebody else when it comes to that time of the year. All right. We've established everything. So everybody, please refrain from getting on your electronic devices unless you are listening to us on the free KD Kenshin 94 app on your smartphone.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.